Let's open our Bibles to Genesis chapter 18, where we left off yesterday. Genesis 18:10 is where I'd like to kind of scroll back to get our context. God is visiting Abraham at Hebron. He is coming incognito with a couple of angels, and he is served dinner, actually lunch, we would say. This seems to be the source of the Hebrews 13 passage that says that we should practice hospitality because many have entertained angels without realizing it. So in the midst of the meal, this is what happens. Genesis 18:10, "He who is said, 'I will surely return to you about this time next year, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son.' Now, Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now, Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. The way of women had ceased to be with Sarah." So we are reminded that she is postmenopausal, probably a couple of decades, more than likely, she's postmenopausal. Remember, she is about 90. And even though she will live to be 137, certainly her ability to have children physically wouldn't have continued much farther beyond her 70s, I would guess. But what happens? Well, verse 12, Sarah laughed to herself. So she does that quiet chuckle, that suppressed laugh, that snigger, that same thing that Abraham had done when he was told this was going to happen. And she said to herself, "After I'm worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure?" Meaning, I get to be a mom after I'm an old lady. And he who is said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh and say, 'Shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? Is anything too hard for he who is? At the appointed time, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah shall have a son.'" Now, I shared with you last episode that I think by now Abraham would have clued in that this was not just some stranger traveling the roads of around Hebron in the heat of the day, but rather this is God himself, because he's using phrases and sharing information that Abraham had received from God not very long before this. So he knows who this is, and so the next situation that's taken care of is the laugh by Sarah inside the tent. So Sarah denied laughing. She said, "I didn't laugh," for she was afraid. Now, was she afraid because maybe Abraham had shared with her some of the things that God had said in their meeting, and she realized that this must be God as well? Or was she just afraid because she had been caught listening in to a private conversation and laughed out loud and basically called into question what was being said by the person? But whatever the reason, God's response was, "No, you did laugh." And very last thing I said to you as we closed up last episode is that this is another one of the reasons why Yitzhak, the son of Abraham and Sarah, that's going to be born about a year from this point, is named Laughter, or He Laughs, Yitzhak. Verse 16. "Then the men set out from there, and they looked down toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them to set them on their way." Now, this is another one of my reasons for thinking that Sodom, certainly, probably Gomorrah, and more than likely Zeboim and Adma were all located in what is now the northern basin of the Dead Sea. I actually think that the cataclysmic destruction of those cities was centered on that northern basin area of the Dead Sea. I shared with you way back when we were talking about Lot and his choice to take the valley and the area around Sodom and Gomorrah as his place to graze his sheep is because it looked like the Garden of Eden was thought to have looked. It was like the Nile Delta, very green, lush, well-watered. It was nothing like that region is today. He even had a name that was different back at that time. It was called the Valley of Siddim, which means the Valley of Cultivated Fields. It was a very wealthy zone. And so I think that the entire Jordan Valley, from around just north of the Sea of Galilee, all the way down to a halfway point toward the Gulf of Aqaba from the southern end of the Dead Sea, I think all of that used to be above sea level. And it collapsed in the destruction that we're about to hear about from the scripture. That the reason there are very sheer drop-offs along both sides of this valley and very badly eroded zones where wadis drained into this valley. I think the reason all that exists now is because there was a sudden destruction back then. All right, so if you leave from Hebron and you go east, you go up and over a little bit of a rise, and then you would be able to look down into the Dead Sea Valley, or back at that time, the Siddim Valley, the Valley of Cultivated Fields. That's how close we are. So they have less than a day's walk from Abraham's place to Sodom. And so Abraham goes with them part of the way. Verse 17, then he who is said, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have chosen him that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of he who is by doing righteousness and justice, so that he who is may bring to Abraham what he has promised him. Now, I want you to focus with me on what God is saying here. Too often, I think this is passed over with. God wants to share his intention to judge cataclysmically the cities of the plain, because he sees Abraham as a key to the future redemption of the world. He has told him, I'm going to give you a multitude of seed, and I expect you to raise them up in the way of the Lord, in the way of the one true God, to teach them to do righteous things, to teach them to do just things, so that I can bring about everything that I've promised you. So because Abraham is looked at as a partner in that process, he is read into what happens to places that are not devoted to the righteousness and justice of God. And that is, judgment falls early. See, every place on planet Earth will eventually come to the judgment of God. That's the great day of the Lord that we often read about that's out there in the future. But from time to time, God has to pull the plug on a particularly sinful group or region, because allowing them to continue will be too destructive to the larger plan. So this is what he tells him, verse 20. Then he who is said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me. And if not, I will know. Now, obviously, God does not personally have to go down there and see that. He knows what's going on there. But he wants Abraham to understand, I am a God who checks things out. I just don't act willy-nilly. I don't just act out of some sort of fiat temperament. I do things based on what's been done. Now, what has been done? We typically think about the sinful activity, sexual activity that is associated with Sodom and Gomorrah. But I think we need to also bring in some of the other things that led down that sinful path. Ezekiel chapter number 16. God, speaking through the prophet, is warning the Israelis that they should not go down the same path as Sodom and Gomorrah. And this is what he says about them. Ezekiel 16:48, as I live, declares he who is God, your sister Sodom and her daughters have not done as you and your daughters have done. Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, so they were full of themselves. Excess of food. Remember, the ancient name of the Dead Sea zone was the Valley of Cultivated Fields. This was the place that the allied kings from Mesopotamia came down and conquered because they wanted all the wealth that came from that place because of grain and also bitumen production. Continuing, and it says, and prosperous ease. So they had more than enough. They were wealthy. They were rich. And so when you become rich, often you don't continue working as hard as you used to. You just kind of live off the profits. But that wasn't just the only thing. Keep reading. And did not aid the poor and needy. So they were self-satisfied, self-centered, and they didn't see a reason to share with anybody else. Verse 50, they were haughty and did an abomination before me, so I removed them when I saw it. So they were wealthy and thoughtless toward others that were not wealthy. They did not share, even though they had more than enough. They did not practice hospitality. Now, the sexual sin probably comes from this idea that when you belong to a society that's got more than enough, you usually have a lot of leisure time on your hands, and leisure time can lead to boredom. And so you start experimenting with things that you haven't done before. And when you start fiddling around with experimenting in sexual matters, well, that's when you start getting into things like more than one wife, more than one husband, then sex outside of your marriage, and then maybe you start experimenting in homosexuality. And maybe after that, bestiality, necrophilia. These are all things that we know that the worst parts of the Canaanite society were engaged in. at some point in their history. Some of those things we know about because in the Mosaic Law that comes up later, they were warned not to practice these very things which the Canaanites were practicing. So when we extrapolate backward, it would appear that Sodom and Gomorrah, Zeboim, Admah, and also Bela, which will become Zoar, they were far ahead of the gradient. They were far ahead of the curve because they were so wealthy. They were committing all of these sorts of sins. All right, so back to Genesis 18 now. So the men turned from there, and they went down towards Sodom. But Abraham stood still before he who is. So the two angels that have accompanied God into the camp of Abraham, they leave. They're heading down on their mission. They will be meeting with Lot later this same day. But God stays where Abraham and he were talking. And so verse 23, Abraham drew near and said, "Will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then sweep away the place and not spare it for 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to put the righteous to death with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do what is right?" Now, you have to appreciate his heart on two fronts here. Well, first of all, he's got a relative there. He knows that his nephew Lot is living in Sodom now. And he's got at least two grandnieces that are down there. Lot is married, so he's got a niece-in-law. And there's future plans for weddings as well. So he's got several members of his family that live down in Sodom that he cares about. And we know that Lot is a righteous man in most of his lifestyle. He's going to have a rough time in the aftermath of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's another story. But he is worthy of being saved. And so Abraham is speaking up on his behalf. But remember that Abraham also saved a whole bunch of the people that had been kidnapped after the wars with the Mesopotamian alliance. He rescued them and brought them back to around Jerusalem. And that's when the king of Sodom came up and got them released into his custody. So it's possible that Abraham knew other people by name and certainly would have known them by sight. So he's concerned about them too. He has a heart. So he pleads with God, "Certainly, if there were even just 50 righteous people, you wouldn't destroy the place, would you?" Verse 26, "And he who is said, 'If I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake.' Abraham answered and said, 'Behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord, I who am but dust and ashes. Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous were lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? And he said, "I will not destroy it if I find 45 there." So Abraham is now trying to bargain with God. Perhaps in his own head, he's going, "Wait a second. Do I really think that there's 50 people there that are righteous? Maybe I better go back on it a little bit." So God now agrees, "No, if there's 45, I won't destroy it." Again, he spoke and says, "Suppose 40 are found there." He answered, "For the sake of 40, I will not do it." Then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there." He answered, "I will not do it if I find 30 there." And he answered, "Behold, I've undertaken to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 are found there." And he answered, "For the sake of 20, I will not destroy it." And then he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak again, but this once. Suppose 10 are found there." And he answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." And that's where Abraham stops bargaining. Why? I'm going to give you my opinion, and that's all it's worth, folks. I think he believed there must have been at least 10 righteous people there. He already knew about his nephew and his nephew's family, and he certainly hoped that there would be at least 6 other people besides them that might be righteous and get the place spared. But there wasn't. And I want you to pay attention to how God's kindness is revealed here. It is so true that God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked. It breaks his heart to have to judge anyone for sin. Because he created us in his likeness, his image, to spend eternity with him. That was the whole plan. And for him, because of our free will, rebellion, to have to send us out of his presence, and sometimes to judge us physically ahead of judgment, spiritual, it kills him. I mean, it's the reason why Jesus came and died and rose again. This is the love of God that is demonstrated in this buildup to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That God was willing to give this area even more time if there were just 10 righteous people. Verse 33. "And he who is went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place." Chapter 19. "The two angels," the two messengers, "who look like human beings, came to Sodom in the evening." So the sun's getting ready to go down. "And Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom." So the gate is the place that people have to come by in order to get into the main part of the city. If it's a double gate structure, then this is probably the place where the open market is located. It's the place where leadership of the city will be available to add their stamp of approval to business transactions, things like that. So Lot seems to have maybe risen up in the leadership of this city since he's been living there, since he's sitting in the gate. But perhaps more significantly, I think he's sitting there keeping an eye on strangers as they come in. Because he doesn't want strangers to be taken advantage of. He practices the hospitality just like that we saw of his uncle Abraham. So Lot saw them, and so he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself to his face to the ground. And then he said, "My lords, please turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way." And they said, "No, we'll spend the night in the town square." But he pressed them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. So he doesn't want them in the square at night. He thinks it's dangerous. So he brings them home. He really insists that they come home with him, and he feeds them supper. Verse 4, "But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people of the last man, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, 'Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may know them.'" Now, this is not the welcome wagon. This is not a community coming to greet these visitors, to celebrate their presence. The phrase here is a euphemism for sexual activity. Remember what I talked about earlier. The problem at Sodom was that they were self-centered and they were bored. And they were experimenting in all sorts of ways sexually. And so these guys have all probably had each other sexually. And so now they're looking for somebody new, some new experience. And here's a couple of good-looking men that they've never seen before. And hey, why shouldn't we all be able to pleasure ourselves with them? Verse 6, Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door after him, and said, I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you, and you do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they've come under the shelter of my roof. Now, there is zero excuse for what Lot just suggested. He's doing it out of a panic. He is, thinking that maybe he can distract them with an offer to wed his daughters to them, but it's to no avail. And so they respond aggressively. They say, stand back. They said, this fellow came to sojourn. He's become the judge. Now we're going to deal worse with you than with them. And then they pressed hard against the man, Lot, and drew near the door to break the door down. So they are very angry that Lot would try to get between them and these two newcomers. And so now Lot has to be rescued. The men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And unfortunately, we're out of time for today. So mark your place there, and we'll get back into this story tomorrow.